Pirate Nation. Purple and gold family. Stand to your feet. Put your crossbones up and lean side to side. Yeah, and lean side to side. Yeah, and lean side to side. Come on. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
welcome to the island, man. It's crazy in here. A whole sea of purple and gold.
Welcome to the Sports Jets podcast. I'm Kyle Barber, along with Dave Rich and Bubba Rosenbaum, and our special guest for the night, Chris Haymeyer.
Hey, guys, how are you? Thanks for having me on again. Good to see you.
Good to have you back, Chris.
Yeah, we started. You started a little bit early there.
No, there was no overlay on the screen. It was just us four sitting on the screen.
No, there was an overlay.
I don't mind. Yeah.
Welcome into.
Oh well, we are live now. The overlay was on the screen on my end. I was like, "What in the world?"
Chris, did you get overlay?
I got a little bit of overlay. I did.
I got no overlay, guys. I apologize. Sorry for all the listeners for the impromptu open. I thought David lost his mind and wasn't going to open the daggum show.
That's what you call taking the bull by the horns.
Well, I wasn't going to sit here and let it die, but I don't know why I didn't get an overlay. There you go. That's what happens when you broadcast live.
No doubt about it. Great to have a great friend back with us, the Campbell play-by-play voice, Chris Haymeyer. Chris, man, welcome in. And a big game tomorrow night in Greenville at Williams Arena at Midgies Coliseum.
Yeah, you know, it's great when this thing goes. I'm sure you guys remembered it. This used to be a home and home series. Every other year they would play either in Buies Creek, especially when we got Gore Arena here, and then ECU. And then you know how it is. Different coaches come in from different areas, and they don't realize how it's a pretty neat little basketball rivalry that goes back and forth. So it'll be fun going up and playing the Pirates again. Always a big game for Campbell when we're playing the purple and gold of ECU.
Yeah, I remember going to, there was a few of us, my friends are graduates. We went to Crown Coliseum many years ago, probably about 20 years ago. And I thought that was cool to have. That's a great venue. By the way, Kyle, I want to see the Alabama show coming up a week from Sunday there. I'm a huge Alabama fan.
Yeah, I saw them in Raleigh at PNC last October. They're still really good love.
Anyway, a little sidebar there for you. But as far as Crown Coliseum, you know, Williams Arena, when you're talking about the home and home, I really like Campbell. I think it's a great university, not because your own. I really like it in basketball. And then we've had football and basketball. And of course, my goodness, Coach Hare, you know, baseball is huge with Coach Godwin and Hare, the two great skippers there. So Campbell, great university. And I tell you, this is going to be for the Pirates. It's going to be a tough matchup. The last two games haven't gone so well for the Pirates. So we'll see how it translates tomorrow night.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit about it before the show, you know, the way that the Pirates were rolling a little bit and that ODU loss. We were talking about that, too, coming off a tournament. It's really tough, so you can kind of excuse that one away. You know, to South Carolina State, that's hard to stomach no matter what your situation is. So they're going to have their attention. They're going to be ready to win, and Campbell, who is 4-3 on the season but has some good wins, isn't going to sneak up on the Pirates. So it's not going to be one of those overlooking games for ECU.
You mentioned playing Campbell down at Buies Creek, and you mentioned how it used to be a home and home, and now it's not. Kind of you play at one or the other, et cetera. For people that aren't going to make the trip down to Buies Creek tomorrow night, what is the Big South's arrangement? Are you guys with ESPN Plus? Are you with Flow? Where can we watch the game?
Yeah, definitely. Well, the game's going to be up at ECU on Friday.
Oh, well, so, it's your eyes. Don't so, even yeah. know where the hell we're playing. And, I'm and in so, the yeah, that will be soon. I say it's on the road.
No, it's going to be up there on ESPN Plus, all of our favorite network. So we all have subscriptions from that. That's for sure.
No doubt about it, Chris. What a great time. And this actually, though, is good for, I think, both teams. I really love, like I said, Campbell and East Carolina. And when you're talking about 4-3 and then the Pirates, this is an opportunity to play a good opponent. It's a rivalry. Again, maybe some of these players don't know about the rivalry, but they should. Maybe the coaching staff doesn't understand about the rivalry. But I think that it'll be a great matchup. I think that one thing that will help Pirate Nation, we need to get a lot of people there. 1-800-ECU, ecpirates.com. Get your tickets because You know, what else is there to do on a Friday night at Greenville? Come on out. And I think that is a one factor for me, I would say, is that that can help the Pirates is certainly the if the Pirates get enough fans there, that will that could make a difference.
Yeah, definitely, because, you know, it'll be interesting to see the Friday night aspect of it. There's usually a whole lot of orange in that arena. So you're right. Although I will have to correct you a little bit, unless things have changed since I live in the area. You know, what is there to do in Greenville on a Friday night that early, I should say, at 7 o'clock, so you can start things up. So you can start things up then. That's the good thing. The crowd won't be too rowdy there, not like a night football game, as they don't tailgate as much for basketball as they do football. But yeah, but usually we bring a whole bunch up from Buies Creek, and like I say, it'll be interesting. Obviously, this is a game that the Pirates really can't afford with the new coaching staff and the regime to have everybody fall off the wagon if they were to lose another game. And, you know, and Campbell's a really good 4-3 this year at North Carolina State. They ended up losing by 6. That was a game where Campbell missed 11 free throws, and including some big ones down the stretch. Then Campbell rebounded, and they beat an App State team that won at Louisville just the week before. And I know Louisville from the ACC isn't the Louisville of the past, but then Campbell came back and ended up a couple of days ago beating a Stetson team that had won at Florida State and won at South Florida. So Campbell, really, of their three losses, two of them, the one to North Carolina State, the other to Southeastern Louisiana, missed a lot of free throws down the stretch. If not, you'll be looking at a Campbell team that's 6-1 with a couple of really good wins on the season. Instead, they're 4-3 with some good wins and some good momentum.
No doubt about it. Talk about some of the players that we should watch out for. You know, that's one of the things I love about basketball is there's always a few guys that are really the stars of the team. What about this particular case with the Camels?
Yeah, one thing that's been a hallmark of Campbell head coach Kevin McGeehan, that's in his 10th year now, believe it or not, for the last 5 years have been winning seasons. He's done a really good job, especially in the transfer era now, in the transfer portal era, of keeping a good core. Not a lot of guys transfer out of this program, and he's got three guys that have been here for four or more years that make up the core of his team. And how many other teams in the nation, period, could say that? Ricky Clemens, who is from Raleigh, and everybody thinks that he is a Chris Clemens' brother because they came from the same part of North Carolina. He's almost as good of a scorer as Chris Clemens. Of course, Chris Clemens is the 5'9", all everything guy from Raleigh's Millbrook High School that came down here in Campbell and ended up being the third leading scorer in NCAA history and had a couple of cup of coffees in the NBA and is now playing overseas in China. But Ricky Clemens, a really good story. He came onto this team as a walk-on. And the year after Chris Clemens left was his sophomore year. The team, as you can imagine, was a little bit down. He was doing great in practice as a defensive stopper. So they put him in a game against Winthrop with a couple weeks left in the season, and he never got out of the starting lineup. He's now Campbell's leading scorer at 14 points per game. He still is, in my book and a lot of other books, the best defender in the Big South Conference, period. And he's a leader of this team in his fifth year as he's taken a COVID year. Jesus Carrillero is a 6'8 Spaniard who can do just about everything, averaging 10 points per game. He averaged in the top 20 in the Big South last year in rebounds, assists, scoring, and field goal percentage. And then Josh Lussain, he's a big guy down low. He's averaging over 10 points per game as well. The thing that's been fun about this Campbell basketball team is they have depth this year. They got 8 new guys in, including 4 transfers. They all play and they all really contribute. Jay Powell is somebody to watch. He's a 6'9" swingman, long as anything, and he's a transfer out of Jacksonville State. That's really a difference maker. So it's a Campbell team that has been a little up and down, but seems to be gelling with this new guys, and they can really go 9, 10, 11 deep, which is something they haven't had in a while.
Chris, you mentioned the transfer you guys coming in, but you also pointed out that you guys don't have a lot of guys enter the portal. What do you contribute that to? What's coach doing to get guys to stay happy and stay in Buies Creek?
He sets up a great environment. I mean, he is a player's coach. He is a guy that will do whatever it takes to to make a team a team. Together today is their hashtag, is their mantra. He really takes care of players. He's a family man himself, and he surrounds himself with assistants that are family guys. And this isn't a program that if you're not performing, will ask you to go into the transfer portal. He's very loyal to his guys. And I think it's like everyone that comes here to Campbell and stay. Campbell might not be a name, a household name that you recognize, especially if you're outside of the region. But gosh, once you get to this campus, it's beautiful. It's like a movie set. Once you get to this arena, which is really the best arena in the Big South and some of the best facilities in the Big South. And once you get to this little place, it's 2 hours from the beach and 3 hours from the mountains and 45 minutes from downtown Raleigh. You say, you know what, this is a pretty good little place for a career. And then the bottom line is Campbell is winning. Kevin McGean has brought a consistent winner here to Campbell for the first time in a long time.
Do you think going to the Colonial will help you guys with recruiting, or do you think it's going to make a difference? Or
No doubt. The Big South has been great for Campbell. Campbell was a founding member of the Big South back in the 80s. Then they went to the then TAC, turned into the Atlantic Sun Conference. And then the best decision that Campbell has made over the past 10 years was getting back in the Big South. The Atlantic Sun, it was too much travel. It was a big difference in a lot of the public schools. It had a lot of money for athletics. And Campbell has really grown in this past decade. Campbell was an afterthought in almost every sport when they were in the Atlantic Sun, and then they were able to rise to the top of the Big South Conference. And it's really time, guys. I mean, they've outgrown the Big South Conference. Big South Conference has changed a little bit too. The Big South that Campbell came in had some really strong schools in it, but by the likes of Liberty, of VMI, of Coastal Carolina. A couple of those teams went on to the FBS, of course, which was good choices for them, but it kind of had this conference pulling up some more athletic programs that were Division II maybe 5 or 10 years ago. So you're talking about places that don't really have the facilities or the money to compete. And so it's the haves and haves nots, the Big South. And last year, Campbell won 13 conference championships, wow. The most ever in their history. And that kind of shows you it's time to go. And this fall, they've already won three. Make no mistake about it. The CAA is a good move for conference stability. I think the Big South's going to be around for a long time, but the CAA not only is going to be around for a long time, especially in football, because that was the big thing with Campbell. This year, there were just six teams in the Big South Conference for football, and a couple of them were just football members. Bryant University from up in Rhode Island, Robert Morris, a couple of teams that you don't know would be in there in the future. Of course, the CAA, as our head football coach Mike Minner said it, and he has a way with words, as you guys know, but he called it the SEC of FCS. And I don't think he was exaggerating too much. They put five teams in the FCS playoffs again for another year, and they're a really, really good conference. So football first and foremost, it's a solid football conference that's never going to go away. And it's expanding the footprint of Campbell. For football, you go all the way up to Maine to play. But for basketball, you go down to the College of Charleston. You're up through Virginia. You're in the D.C. metro area. You're in Philadelphia. You're in the New York metro area. You're in Boston. I think it's going to do a lot, not only for athletic recruiting, because you're playing names and universities, you know, and you're expanding your footprint. But it's going to be doing a lot for the university, guys. This is a university that away from athletics is on the rise too, and like everybody, wants to expand their footprint and get some people from the Northeast out of the winter and come down here to the South for school. So we'll see how it works.
Chris, since you brought up football, very quickly before we continue on with a little football talk, going back to the Chris Clemens, Ricky Clemens thing, just out of curiosity, I looked up his bio, and I believe Ricky Clemens' father, his name is Chris, of all yeah. things, and then he has a brother named Christian. And I was like, well, maybe Chris Clemens' real name is Christian.
Yeah, no doubt, Bubba. And please, you know, beforehand, you ask and don't think that that you were the only one. There are some articles on the internet by some pretty good people when they talk about Chris Clemens and Ricky Clemens and say that they're brothers. So I've had a lot of people saying, I looked that up on the internet, and I'm like, well, show me that article. I'm like, well, gosh, this is a pretty good writer that does it. So this year in this TV spot chart in the back, one of the things along with, hey, this is a preseason all-conference performer, former walk-on who's leading this team and this and that, not the brother of Chris Clemens is what we've had to put in there, because some people that don't do their due diligence and don't do like you and ask the broadcaster, you know, if this is true or not, they'll just say it on air. And it's been a frustrating thing to some of those around Campbell.
Now, going back to Coach Minner's team, 5-6, but four out of those six losses were by 8 points or less, including a 22-14 loss to Jackson State, and then also a near miss against a very good Gardner-Webb team, a Gardner-Webb team that played three FBS opponents, and very good FBS opponents, at Liberty, Marshall, Coastal Carolina, and nearly beat two of them and were competitive in all three. Tell us, give us the Cliff Notes version on the season. Obviously, we saw the Campbells live, but outside of the East Carolina game, what was the year like?
Yeah, man. I mean, this was a team that was picked to finish second in the Big South, and a team that truly thought that they could, just in their fifth year of scholarship football, to go to the FCS playoffs. And the belief was there. When Campbell was totally healthy, and that was coming off a bye after that East Carolina game, where I don't want to bring it up to you guys, but it was 10-7 Campbell after the first quarter, and that's the picture of the scoreboard that I took, and it's hanging in my office right now. But that's a discussion for next football season. NC Central was one of the surprises in the MEAC, and they ended up having a really good year. But they were on a roll. They won at New Hampshire, which for those that know FCS football is a perennial top 20 team and was in the top 20. And Campbell just laid the lumber to them on October 1st. It was a Campbell team that ended up winning 48-18. That was a team that thought, my goodness, that this is the team we thought they were. They beat a couple of not very good Big South teams at home, Charleston Southern and Robert Morris. And then they went out and against Dion's team a week before that they were on game day, that they played the top 10 Jackson State team, and they played them to within a score. It was a tough game late. In that game, they got some injuries, especially to the offensive line, and they came back and blew a second-half lead to North Carolina A&T, had a couple of more injuries, and then it just went downhill from that. They lost a close game at Bryant. You talked about the close game versus Gardner-Webb. One-score games in each of those games, and instead of wins, they were three straight losses, and Campbell won the last game of the season but went on to a 5-6 year. But a lot of promise there. Campbell had an injury to their all-conference quarterback, Haj Malik Williams. Chad Masco was a guy that originally was committed as a sophomore in high school to Florida State. He ended up taking over for Haj when the Campbell quarterback was injured. And, boy, he showed flashes of why he was a former three-star that had a lot of FBS offers. Campbell found a good true freshman running back into Corey Rogers and a good wide receiver in Chaney Fitzgerald. So the core is there, and their coaching staff is telling us it's going to be a number one, at the very least, top two FCS high school recruiting class for Campbell. So, again, Campbell's going to have to step up big time because they're going from the Big South to the CAA, but the recruiting's there, and we're starting to see, especially at the end of the year, some of those freshmen make an impact.
And, Chris, as far as one question I had is that with Campbell making the move to CAA, I know that you guys are going to be at the top of the FCS. But any hopes for Campbell fans to go to FBS? Because you look at it and you guys are on the move, you're on the rise, kind of like what Liberty did, James Madison, that James Madison, of course, being in the CAA and moving up. What about you guys? I'm not talking about right now in the next season or two. I'm just saying long term, is that something that the university's even talked about?
Man, I think we're just trying to, there was such a push to get some stability in the conference, especially football, that right now, all of a sudden, we've had to take a breath and go, okay, we're going to have to get some more money together here from the plane rides to Boston and the plane rides that. Like Campbell knows and have already started to say, hey, if we're going to compete in the CAA, if we're going to try to win championships at the rate like we did in the Big South, we're in pretty good position right now. But to compete in the CAA, we're going to have to raise more money. We're going to have to get some facilities upgraded, and we're going to have to make the infrastructure for a way that we can compete in the CAA. So that is, it is something that that has been talked about a little bit, but right now they know before they can even think of something like that, that they're going to have to consistently win in football and go to the FCS playoffs. Now, I will say, this is a program that in the modern era has just been around for 15 years. And as we've talked about on your show before, has just been a scholarship FCS program for 5 years. So when you look at the overall and how Campbell has been climbing, they're going at a good rate. But I think, you know, the coaching staff included, this will be year number 11 for Mike Minner. He wants to raise a trophy, and hopefully he can do that in the CAA.
Yeah, you guys, you're talking about going FBS down the road, and I got, yeah, I agree. You're just going to the CAA now. Get your feet wet there before you even think about the next step. But, you know, you look at FCS football, and Appalachian moved up to FBS several years ago. JMU just moved up to FBS. Coastal's moved up to FBS. A lot of the top programs in the Carolinas and Virginia in this region are gone from the FCS ranks up to FBS. You still have A&T, who's going to the CAA with you guys, and, you know, Delaware, et cetera, in the CAA. Richmond, but you guys have a chance now, I think, in the Colonial, and you're already doing it in recruiting, to really become the, there's always been a kind of a power in North Carolina or in the Carolinas in general at the FCS level. And if you guys recruiting at the rate you're going and joining the CAA, you guys have a chance to step up and kind of fill those shoes as the power school, if you will, in the Carolinas at the FCS level.
Yeah, and that's a good point, and that's why it's been so much fun to make this move too. You know, it's not one of those crazy things like USC. I'm joining the Big Ten as far as geographically go. The southern schools in the CAA, and that's why the CAA wanted to expand to the south to make some balance. You know, it's not a football school, but UNCW is a big rivalry here. But with Elon, with NCA&T, with William and Mary, and Hampton, it's a pretty darn good little football pocket here in the South. And you guys, football has made such a difference here at Campbell. I know we talked a lot about, you know, Campbell before moving into Gore Arena in basketball. They played in the smallest arena in all of Division I basketball. And that was just, you know, and that was just 15 years ago. You talked about these games between Campbell and ECU. Most of them were down in Fayetteville. That's because for teams to play at Campbell, they would say, hey, we can't play in the smallest arena that looks straight out of Hoosiers. Carter Gym, which is still here and is something that if you ever come by Buies Creek or coming by for a baseball game or something like that, you got to go in it because you won't believe it's as small as it is. And some of those Hoosiers gyms were better than it. That was Campbell 15 years ago when Campbell didn't have a football team and they played in the smallest gym in all of Division I basketball. And that's why it's been such an amazing rise for a decade and a half. 12 years ago, if we're on any podcast and someone brings out that Campbell is going to be a football school in the CAA, you would have been laughed off of whatever platform you were on. So it's been a lot of fun, guys, because I kind of got here, as we said, the creek was rising, and the creek is now rising, and it's over its banks, and it's headed up the I-95 category, the corridor. So watch out,
Chris. We used to call that the Billy Barn back.
Yep, when yep. Was there.
And in fact, our good buddy Shell was talking about. I wanted to ask you, how was the basketball camp when I was a teenager in the 80s? That was the Campbell Basketball School. And for those people that are old enough to know who Bones McKinney is, a former Wake Forest head coach, he spoke to us. There was a lot of ACC basketball players that would come down, but used to be this really big thing. Is it still the same way? I haven't really stayed connected with the camp over the years.
You know, unfortunately not. It is still around. But up until COVID, it was the longest running basketball camp in the entire world. And in fact, during COVID, we put together a documentary on it. It hasn't been released yet, but found out tons of facts. They will claim that, and if you think about it, of course, getting started back in the 50s, and of course, all of us aren't aren't old enough to really remember what was going on back there. But back in the 50s, they didn't have basketball camps really of any kind. That was a foreign subject and a foreign idea. And they started this basketball camp. And it's interesting you mentioned that because, you know, me being from Missouri and not knowing about the basketball camp. But if you talk to anyone that was growing up during the 70s and 80s and had any sort of interest whatsoever in basketball, they probably at least one summer came to the what they called the Campbell Basketball School. And what was amazing of it, it was back before the different NCAA rules were out there and everything like that. And so during the 70s and 80s, as you talked about, the best coaches in the ACC, the coaches in the ACC came down here, and the camp counselors were the all ACC players. It's amazing that the laundry list of guys, including Michael Jordan, that were down here for a couple days of camps as counselors, because in those days you could pay these guys to come down, and that's how they got money during the summer. And it was an amazing thing. The players that have played in that quote unquote smallest gym in all of the Division I basketball. So we'll have to have another visit when that documentary comes out, because it's really fascinating the history that happened right here in Buies Creek, North Carolina, and how it's still known throughout the United States and throughout the world. If you were, you know, a basketball fan or hooked into basketball back then, you knew about the Campbell Basketball School.
No doubt, it's a great thing. And I know Bubba, you had some more. Bubba, you had some football questions.
No, I was transitioning back to hoops and tomorrow night's game. As I looked over Campbell's information in preparation for not only tonight but just what we're going to see tomorrow, and Josh Lussain, his effort stood out to me. What, 29 points against Stetson? And yeah. And prior to that game, you know, he didn't have bad numbers, what, 7 or 8 points a game. But you know, talk about that 29-point performance. I think the roster says 6'7", 240.
Yeah, yeah. Joshua Lussain, man, he is a wide body, but he's also a guy that can take the ball out on the perimeter and shoot the three. And Kevin McGeehan, Campbell's head coach's offense, it's a hybrid of the Princeton. It's the Princeton, don't call it the Princeton. You'll see backdoor cuts tomorrow. But you also see everybody on the floor, no matter if you're the starting center like Joshua Lussain or one of the guards, can dribble and shoot the three. And so with that, you know, you have a lot of versatility in guys. And Joshua Lussain was a guy that had a fantastic freshman and sophomore year. And then he got banged up. He'd been injured the first part of the last two seasons and was kind of falling out of the rotation and never got things going. Healthy Joshua Lussain that got his first start in a long time on Sunday for the injured Jesus Carrillero. Boy. He took the bull by the horns. He was hitting everything and again had that career high in points. So he's a difference maker that has his confidence back. And the big key will be keeping him out of foul trouble, especially against the athletes that'll be on the floor for ECU.
Chris, I don't know if we have anything else about basketball that Dave and Bubba want to touch on, but I want to ask you this. Many of our listeners will remember you as the voice of the East Carolina baseball team for several years. What is your favorite memory of calling ECU baseball back in the day?
Man, I tell you what, it was the atmosphere at Clark LeClaire. I mean, you guys know it because you lived it or what have you. But you know, where I came from in the Midwest, you know, it's all about professional baseball, and people didn't really pay much attention to college baseball. That's changed a little bit now, but. But, you know, in the Midwest where I was from in Missouri, in college baseball, the first 2 months of the season, it was pretty darn cold out there. So you couldn't get really excited. But man, being at that stadium, and it's not just in the big games, it's the midweek games where you'll fill up that place. And it's the jungle, and it's truly a college baseball atmosphere that isn't really matched anywhere on the East Coast. And that's what was fun. It was fun being a part of that thing, because you know every pitch mattered, every inning mattered, and the ECU baseball fans are as knowledgeable as any fans in all of in all of college, in all of college baseball. It was so much fun. Oh, and by the way, the awesome trips they were going. I was a part of one of those trips out to California. Campbell played a 3-game series with Pepperdine. And when people ask me, what is one of the coolest places I've ever broadcast, I will say it was that 3-game series, because I show up with the ECU baseball team and I'm pulling my radio gear and I'm like, okay, you know, where am I going in the press box? And they're like, ah, it doesn't rain here in California, so you'll just be out in the middle of the bleachers there. That would be a nightmare scenario anywhere else. But guys, I'm sitting back and I'm looking off, and literally over the center field wall, a couple miles, you see the blue of the Pacific Ocean. Campbell ended up winning, or ECU ended up winning the final game of that 3-game series. But that's something I'll never forget.
That's a pretty cool spot to broadcast a game. Sitting up
there. Oh, my gosh.
Because of California. Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
No doubt. And that moment, certainly with Pepperdine, is a beautiful – that's Malibu, right?
Yeah, that's Malibu, because it's you'll think this is funny, too. It's California. It's a different place, guys. As you know, it's got some good things and some bad things. They don't have lights at that field. Because I think Steven Spielberg's mansion was over to the right. Barbara Streisand's mansion was to the back. Oprah's mansion was to that.
Wow.
And because of those big mansions, they didn't want the big lights at night messing up their view. I swear to you, because I ask them, like, why does a school like Pepperdine that, you know, has had a pretty good baseball stadium, you know, why are we playing all these games Friday and Saturday at 3:00? And that was the reason that they gave me. So Spielberg shut the lights down there in Malibu.
Really kind of gives them Pepperdine's program isn't what it was here recently, several years ago, but kind of makes it difficult for them to host if they don't have lights in the stadium.
Yeah, no doubt. And that might have changed, by now, but that was that was something. Although, hey, you know, I didn't mind sitting in the middle of a 75-degree weather looking out at the ocean at 3:00 on a Friday, that's for sure.
No, worst places to be, for sure.
No doubt about it. In fact, the Pirates are going to have another great season coming up in baseball, but we're
hard to believe it's 3 months away.
It really is, no doubt about it. In fact, Chris, as far as the game tomorrow night, I know that a lot of fans are going to hopefully show up. It's we were talking about that Friday night, and one of the things that's great is I normally take my kids there. Great family atmosphere, but you get a chance to see two teams, in-state rivals, not too far away. A lot of history between the two schools. Why wouldn't you come out and see a game tomorrow night?
Yeah, right. Definitely. I mean, these are two teams that are going to put on a show. Indeed, you know, there's a little bit more sizzle to this. Again, you know, the coaches might not know a little bit about the rivalry, but there's North Carolina kids on both of these teams, and the fans will be there and make it a little bit of an atmosphere. So hopefully, you know, the ECU fans are over what happened midway in the week, and everybody's remembering that it doesn't matter a whole lot what happens in the non-conference part of the season. It's all about getting your team right for conference. So I think it's going to be a good game. I would be surprised if it's not.
No doubt. And how can people hear your work, man? We love your voice. We appreciate everything you've done for East Carolina and what you're doing for Campbell. How can they hear the games?
Yeah, thank you so much. We're on the Varsity Network this year, which is Learfield's app, which, you know, you not only can get the Campbell basketball game, you can get the Kentucky and Kansas basketball games as well as ECU. So on the Varsity Network and GoCamels.com.
Well, I mean, it's the Varsity app. I'll just say that. East Carolina switched affiliations, and it is what it is.
All right, Chris, thank you so much, man. We enjoyed it. Thanks for your patience tonight in the green room, and I look forward to seeing you. Hopefully, I'll see you tomorrow night at the game.
Hey, definitely. Thanks so much for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, as always. Appreciate you coming on. Have a good night.
You too.
Bye-bye. Appreciate Chris on with us, as always. So much fun. In fact, it's going to be a great game tomorrow night. Again, get your tickets, ecupirates.com. You can go there, 1-800-DIAL-ECU.
I got a promotion idea for the basketball team to do. It's too late to do it tomorrow night, but it's throwing out there if anybody's listening to this. People like the Christmas shop this time of year, and we've got the Daddy Student Store, which I think is now ran by it's a Barnes & Noble, it's some big book company that bought the student store now. The university's no longer running it. Either them or UBE, if they would have like a big sale, 50% off items at the Coliseum the night of a basketball game, I think that'd be a good promotional idea right now. 50% off all ECU gear only at the basketball game.
Hey, that's a great idea. Especially, hey, Bubba, what are those? Do you have a picture of that? Those shirts they had for the Pirates. You remember that? It looked more like the Lakers, but it was a great look. And
you're just talking about the T-shirt jersey,
yeah.
The one they gave away on opening night.
They should sell that at the basketball game.
Just one moment. I believe I still have it.
There's lots of different things I think we could do like that make sense that would get people to come out. I mean, and It might not increase the crowd at all, but I'm just thinking off the top of my head, what are people doing this year on a Friday night besides going to a basketball game? First thing that comes to mind is Christmas shopping. And, you know, maybe you could combine the two if we could get with Dowdy Student Store or UBE and have like a 50% off sale only at the basketball game. You probably get some extra people in there. Just some outside the box thinking as Bob was trying to find the T-shirt.
Yeah, and so talking about Pirate fans stepping up, and boy, did Pirate Nation step up in a big way today. Tickets going on sale, and tables for purchase at the ECU baseball banquet, and it always sells out, but it sold out in one day. So it's generally right around 600 fans. At the new ECU Student Center, I say new, two or three years old now at least, but selling out in one day. I don't know what time they sold out, but tickets went on sale at 8 or 9 o'clock this morning, and they put something out there on social media on Twitter right around 5:45, 6 o'clock, saying that it was sold out.
Yeah, great support for the baseball team always. That doesn't surprise me at all. Maybe time to expand the where we have it at, so we can sell more tickets. I don't know, but great that it's sold out. Better. How have we heard anything on bowl tickets? I thought the priority deadline being before the actual bowl game was announced was a bit silly, but have we heard anything about how bowl tickets? I don't know how the hell you put your priority deadline, how you sell bowl tickets before you know which bowl game you're going to.
Yeah, I was thinking back and trying to recall if I remember that being done in the past, and
I don't.
Not saying it hasn't been, but I didn't recall it.
There's not a lot of recent memory to go by, because last year, the bowl game got announced early, and prior to that, you'd have to go all the way back to 14, and it's so hard to remember. I don't remember it in the past, but maybe it has been done. I don't know. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I'm sure they have their reasons, but I don't get it.
Dave, you're on mute.
Thank you. I was going to say, I agree with you guys. Sunday is when we definitely will know.
Yeah. Maybe Saturday.
I wish it were Saturday, but I wish it was tonight. Man, this has been the longest week of my life waiting to find out where we're going. I would really like to go ahead and know.
We'll know in a couple more days. It'll be Saturday or Sunday, and we'll know. There was a lot of talk of Boston early on, and looks like that's cooled off a little. More talk of the military bowl here recently. A lot of talk of Gasparilla down in Tampa. Some people like Brett McMurphy are saying Myrtle Beach, but we're hearing from sources inside the program that Myrtle's really not going to be an option. I hope it is, but it'll be interesting to see if it is Tampa and Gasparilla who will end up playing, because I believe that's an ACC tie also, but they're not going to fill it. So I think Conference USA has the backup there, but I'm not sure they can fill it. It could be UConn or somebody down at the Gasparilla in Tampa, or Liberty, something like that. I saw one projection had Coastal, which I don't think the Sun Belt has a tie to that bowl, but who knows?
Yeah, right now, and here's another thing, guys. I said, what if the military bowl wants us really bad? So what if it comes down to a situation, what I've been hearing, is you have Cincinnati going to basically would come down to Tulane. If they win, they go to New Year's Six, or if USCF, and then you have the winner of that game is going to the Cotton Bowl, and then the loser would be going to, I heard, Gasparilla, I've heard Birmingham,
I think the pecking order, Dave, I believe the pecking order in the conference, and I could be wrong on this, I believe Birmingham and military had the first two picks after the New Year's Six. So I believe that's the case. So I don't know how against we are of going to the Military Bowl. If we've been that blatant about it, then I could see them taking UCF or Tulane, whoever loses, whoever Birmingham doesn't take. I don't know. It sounds like we're really pushing for Tampa now in the Gasparilla Bowl, but it'll be interesting how it plays out. Have you guys heard anything in more detail than that? I haven't.
No, just we'd heard, you know, of course, it seems like a lot of push for Fenway. And
early
then,
on, yeah.
Early on. I'm hearing what I've heard from different, you know, just reading the stuff and what people are saying is, including the administration, is that Cincinnati is going to go to the Fenway Bowl. That military doesn't, we won't, the Military Bowl wants us. The administration doesn't want the Military Bowl.
Well, here's the one thing I would say. If it was a slam dunk and Cincinnati was going to the Fenway Bowl and Birmingham or military weren't interested in Cincinnati, that would have already happened. That's what happened last year with us. Birmingham released us and we could go ahead and accept the Military Bowl berth. So I wouldn't say Cincinnati's a lock for Fenway, or it would have already happened. Let's say UCF beats Tulane and goes to the New Year's Six, and then Tulane goes to Birmingham. I could easily see Cincinnati in the military, which I think would then put us back in line to go to Fenway. So I still think Fenway's on the table, personally.
Yeah, I haven't heard, you know, against that, but we'll see how that I would like to, as Stevie talks about the Military Bowl, EC versus Wake Forest or Syracuse.
Syracuse. I don't want to play Wake Forest.
Well, Syracuse doesn't want to play. We know that. I don't know if you guys heard that yesterday.
They don't want to play at Fenway because it conflicts with their exams.
Yeah, so they don't want to play that. So they're not going to be playing. Syracuse won't be playing in Fenway, so we know that. But they would military.
Maybe not. Just because you don't want to do something don't mean you won't. Military, ECU, Syracuse, I can get fired up for that.
Yeah.
I'm honestly going to be fired up for any bowl matchup. No Fenway. Justin, are you hearing that for sure? Or are you just, is that just your opinion, no Fenway? Because I wouldn't say no Fenway until Cincinnati gets that official invite. So
I'm not sure which way he's leaning on that, which way he means no Fenway, but Myrtle Beach, we heard Marshall, we've heard.
That would be great.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing for me is we play them again in September. I mean, that's my only...
That's a chance for somebody to get revenge, whoever Maybe. Loses the game. It would have been different if we played them this year, but we didn't. We played them next year, and we played them last year. That's always fun to play Marshall. I have no problem with that at all.
Justin says, just my opinion, the one bowl I can't attend.
Got you. Well, I'm hoping for Myrtle because it's the one game I can't attend. But it'll be what it'll be. Whatever bowl game we go to, I'll be fired up.
He'd love to get a Fenway, just not this year. And then Stevie said 1,000% Military Bowl, zero chance of Fenway.
Stevie who?
Stevie Johnson.
Oh, we don't listen to Stevie Johnson.
Okay.
We ignore his comments. So please continue to ignore his comments for the rest of the show.
Okay.
Now, if it was Stevie Fly, on the other hand, that'd be cool.
Stevie
Fly's a great dude. But we'll go wherever they send us. Bottom line, and. If that ends up being Annapolis in the Military Bowl, then that's where we'll go and play Syracuse or Louisville or whoever the hell's in the bowl.
That's in fact, Justin's saying what he's hearing is between Military, Myrtle, or Boca.
Yeah, I hadn't heard Boca much here recently, Justin. I've heard a lot more Gasparilla and Tampa, but the Boca Bowl was something I was hearing more earlier. And that would be against the Sun Belt or a Conference USA team. So you could have that coveted East Carolina, Coastal Carolina matchup in Boca Raton, or I don't know what other matchups, maybe Georgia Southern from Conference USA, could be somebody like Western Kentucky. I don't want to play them with their passing game. But Boca, I could see that being on the table.
No doubt about it. Well, you know, that's the one thing we can – I guess debate that the next few days until we definitely know on Sunday afternoon and on ESPN, we'll find out those polls, but it's going to be a lot of fun. I guess it's been fun this week, but it's nerve wracking too. It'd be nice to see that whatever.
Does it really stress you out that much? Are you really that worried about it? He's trying to make your travel plans.
Yeah. The travel plans is the. I know we have a guy that we know in a group text that has booked like 5 or 6 rooms.
Wow. You know, I hope we got good cancellation policies.
So, well, you were in that same group text too.
Yeah. I've been reading some of it. I hadn't been distracted anyway, times this week, but it'll be what it'll be. I mean, at the end of the day, we'll know this weekend, and you can either go or you can't go. And I don't mean the literal you, I mean the figurative you, everyone. And if it works out where you can go, great. If it works out where you can't, you can't. I mean, not everybody can go to Boston. Not everybody can go to Boca. Some can go to one, some can go to the other. The dates matter. It's going to depend. And Birmingham keeps not coming up. And I would think Birmingham's still on the table probably.
You know.
Independence Bowl's another one. I mean, the American has so many doggone bowl ties, and half of them aren't even being mentioned.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So, hey, I'm just happy that we're having this conversation to be able to talk about a bowl. As we started the show almost 5 years ago, just to be in a bowl was a delusional thought, right?
Unfortunately, yeah. When Scotty was here, yeah, it was the only bowl we ran was the toilet bowl. And it's definitely good to have back-to-back winning seasons and know we're hitting to the postseason, going somewhere. And just the question now is just where.
Yeah, and the fact that we have we have a chance to have 15 wins in 2 seasons, Kyle.
Yeah, no, sure, absolutely. It should be 16, but unfortunately Boston College backed out on us. Bubba, Dave, championship game starting tomorrow night, conference championships. You got the ACC, the SEC, the Big Ten, the Pac-12, Big 12, the MAC, Conference USA, the American. What conference championship games are you guys looking forward to watching the most?
I have to say that our conference championship is my most favorite. Tulane, UCF, like we were talking about before, in 2 years, we'll get to that in a little bit. That'll matter. But the fact that those two teams, New Year's Six on the line.
Cotton Bowl, yeah.
The Cotton Bowl is still a big deal. And the fact that could have been us, you know, if we had.
Yeah. We're closer than the record indicates.
Right. So. For me, I'm going to watch that bowl knowing that we were right there. That could be us, and that could be us moving forward. So
you got to root for the Green Wave because they're staying in the conference. To me, it looks good for the American. If Tulane wins, it's good headlines. You know, that school that won the conference is still in the conference. So hopefully the Green Wave gets it done. Obviously, the ACC championship has some regional interest. Clemson versus North Carolina. North Carolina on a 2-game losing streak. Clemson coming off of a loss to South Carolina. Figure they're going to be pissed off. That's an interesting game. Who do y'all like in that one?
I'm going Clemson. I think if Clemson had won against South Carolina, then, you know, maybe North Carolina could, you know, sneak up on them. But I really feel like that Clemson losing to South Carolina, I feel like with Clemson's defense, I don't know. We'll see. I think their Clemson's defense is going to shut down Drake May and company. We'll have to wait and see. I could be dead wrong.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. I expect it to be a competitive ball game, but I think Clemson gets it done. They losing to South Carolina, they're going to at least salvage something this season. And to them, a salvageable season is at least winning the ACC championship with the standards they have in recent years. And, you know, who knows? Carolina might get it done and finally win the ACC. I hope not, but I'll be watching that one. SEC championship lost a little bit of its luster with LSU losing. Now they can't make the playoffs, but they can shank things up by beating Georgia. And, guys, what in the world happens if Purdue beats Michigan? I mean, 8-4 Purdue. If they were to beat Michigan, that would kind of throw a monkey wrench into everything.
Well, there's a lot of people thinking that it's a 12-0 team. That unless I think what it comes down to, the discussion this week has been if Purdue blows them out, then you'll see a change. If it's a tight game and Purdue beats Michigan, Michigan will still make the playoffs.
Yeah, you're probably right. It'll probably be the 4 seed, but still,
right. Yeah, the seeding will change. Yep.
Yeah, TCU, Kansas State's the big one. Can TCU finish it off? Can USC finish it off? I mean, it really could be a really clean playoff with 4 different conferences represented, or if a couple upsets happen, we could have a hot mess and Alabama gets back into the discussion.
Yeah, I kind of like this year with having TCU, and it feels weird to say USC is kind of like an underdog. But I feel like with USC in there with Lincoln Riley, that's pretty cool. You also have with the TCU story has been fantastic for college football, and not the same old school, same old, same old. And Michigan is on the rise, and even though they're brand name, and you know, Georgia may not win it this year. You never know. I think it's been so much parity, and we'll have to wait and see. But those particular games. What about you, Bubba? What do you think about the championships, the conference championships?
I'm really looking forward to the game between TCU and K-State. I think that will be a tremendous ball game. I do, you know, a lot of folks, and I guess I can see why, you know, it's tough to win them all. They played them competitively earlier. I think TCU was a 38-28 winner in that one, but that one was in Manhattan. I think TCU will find a way to get it done. I know Iowa State had a down year compared to what they've been in recent seasons, but they were still competitive in most games. And what TCU did to them last weekend really surprised me, winning 62-14. So I do think TCU will probably find a way to finish the business and secure that playoff bid. And the USC-Utah game, I think USC will bounce back, but that one's going to be a very interesting game. I need to check and see what the over-under is in that one after the two teams combined for 85 in the first game that Utah won, 43-42.
Yeah, and well, what do you – go ahead. I was gonna say, what if you do it for Sonny Dykes and you win the national championship in year one at TCU? You just go ahead and retire. Say, to hell with this. I've done all I can do.
Talk about a storybook season, obviously. But man, you know,
I believe I'd call it a career.
Man, what a script there if that does happen.
God, and you know, and it's. He leaves the crosstown rival SMU to go to TCU to do it, which, you know, I kind of frowned upon him for doing that at the time and still kind of thought it was a crappy thing to do. But you can't argue with the success he's had, that's for sure. So,
I'm really looking forward to seeing the rematch in the American as well after Tulane fell to UCF.
Yeah.
That game was really – probably not as close. Didn't have the opportunity to watch it, but 38-31, and UCF led by as many as three touchdowns or so. But
yes,
I'm really pulling for the green wave in that one.
Yeah, me too. Obviously, you want the team staying in the American to win. I also thought it was interesting. I was thinking about this earlier with my talk to my Southern Miss buddy. Southern Miss beat Tulane. East Carolina beat UCF. So it's kind of funny that just, you know, to myself anyway, and to my buddy that's a USM fan, that our two schools beat the two teams that the winner is going to be playing in the Cotton Bowl.
And speaking of USF, a lot had been made of Deion Sanders replacing Jeff Scott, but then – you know, also, you've heard that Jamie Chadwell's name had been mentioned heavily, but also now, I'm sure you've seen this, guys, Jamie Chadwell's name is being mentioned heavily to replace Hugh Freeze at Liberty. Wow. And obviously Liberty has deep pockets, so it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
I could see that happening. That makes some sense to me. I think him going to South Florida could work too, but I could really see Jamie Chadwell taking that Liberty job. Because, you know, because of the style of offense he runs, I don't know that he's going to get a Power 5 offer. Even though he does spread it out, it has a lot of triple option elements, and that, for whatever reason, scares a lot of so-called Power 5 schools away. So, if he ever wants to move on from Coastal, he'll probably have to take a South Florida-type job or a Liberty-type job, which Liberty's going to be a problem. Going into Conference USA, they're going to dominate that league. I really think it's only going to be a matter of time before – Liberty is going to put themselves in a position where the American or the Sun Belt is going to have to invite them.
Dave, you're still on mute.
Sorry. I'm dealing with other stuff too at the same time, but that with Conference USA, you were talking about Liberty and Conference USA. What about Liberty? Do you guys think Jamie Chadwell? I know y'all were just talking about that.
Yeah, we were just talking about that. I think because of the money, even though it's not a step up in terms of conference, but in terms of money, yeah, I can see that happening. And I say again, I think Liberty and Conference USA is going to kind of force the hand of the American and the Sun Belt to invite them, because I think they're going to dominate the league every year, because they're going to get a good coach. They're not going to lose Hugh Freeze and then hire Bubba Brazil. They're going to, if you don't know who that is, look it up. they're going to make a hell of a hire, and whether it's a Jamie Chadwell or maybe somebody out of coaching, like
hey, what about Deion Sanders?
Yeah, I don't see Deion working out at Liberty.
That was a joke. But.
I can see old Deion in South Florida. I don't see that working out at Liberty. But, you know, if they don't get Chadwell, I would expect them to go after maybe a Dan Mullen, somebody of that ilk. So they're going to make a good hire because, like you said, they got deep pockets and they're very serious about athletics.
And for all of our viewers and listeners, a lot of folks have seen this, but I was sharing it with one of our groups earlier today. The video of Deion on the sideline, you know, goes back to the whole Eddie Robinson Jr. press conference interaction between the two. Deion Sanders had been told by Eddie Robinson Jr. that he wasn't swack. And, of course, Deion was not going to not respond to that. So he had a hoodie made, an Under Armour hoodie that says, "Who ain't swack?" And then on the back it says, "I am swack." And it got turned into a song, and they played at the Jackson State games. It's tremendous. And watching Deion dancing on the sideline and the crowd getting hype, crunked, whatever you want to say to it.
Go ahead, Bubba. Speak that lingo. I knew
y'all would like that.
Yeah, hype and nut. There's not, when I think of Bubba, I think of hype and crunk.
Yeah, exactly. You
know. Well, he's gonna have to look, see if he can look. He is swag. Well, let's see. Let's see if he's swag. If he stays at Jackson State after all these offers, then you'll have to say, yeah, he's swag. Because he's got some opportunities out there. And of course, Deion ain't hurting for money, but everybody likes more. So it'll be interesting to see what he does. He can be the head coach of Jackson State forever if he wants to. That's the interesting thing. It is permanent job security. Okay.
Dave, are you swag? Dave's decided to stay on mute.
Okay. All right, cool. Dave, just stay on mute. That's it.
Oh, wow.
Dave, how swag are you?
I'm not.
How swag? Okay.
No. I was saying about Cincinnati is another job that I've heard rumored that.
Hey, I've heard Jamie Chadwell's name come up for that too.
For that? I was talking about Deion Sanders.
That ain't gonna happen. But I've heard that too. But I heard Chadwell's name come up for Cincinnati. I don't know what Cincinnati's gonna do. You know, they might hire somebody on staff. I'm not sure. That's an interesting situation. They're going to the Big 12. They got a lot of momentum. It's a good job, but you're taking over for a guy who's kind of become a legend there, and now he's moving on to Wisconsin. So I don't know what sense he's going to do. Really don't care that much because they're leaving the American, but it'll be interesting to see who they hire. I could suggest some names, but it would be pointless. So it'll be interesting to see who they hire.
No doubt. We don't really care because they're going to the Big 12.
Yeah, and by the way, guys, tomorrow, if you happen to be off work for whatever reason, you need something to do mid-afternoon, 1 o'clock on ESPN Plus, Buffalo's playing Akron in a college football game. Buffalo's trying to get bowl eligible. That game had to be rescheduled because there was a blizzard in Buffalo a couple weeks ago. And I'm not sure why they're playing it on 1 o'clock on a Friday. My guess, is the MAC championship game tomorrow night or is it Saturday? If it's tomorrow night, then I would assume it would be by conference bylaws. Maybe all conference games have to be played before the championship. But if that championship game isn't until Saturday, I have no idea why they're playing that game at 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon.
Now that you say that.
The game is tomorrow night.
Yeah. Okay, well, then that makes perfect
sense. So that explains why that game's being played at at 1 p.m. And you also, in addition to the MAC game, you have the Pac-12.
Yeah, Pac-12 championship game tomorrow night, USC and Utah. So that'll be a good one, too. It's fun. Championship weekend is always fun. There's only a handful of games, but they all mean something. So it's always a fun weekend to me.
And it's going to be, once we get to the playoff, it's going to mean even more. You want to talk about
training? Oh, yeah. And when you go to the 12-team playoff, yeah, because you're going to have, like, you know, all eyes would be on the American championship game tomorrow if we were already in the playoff era, if it was already 2024. Because that, you know, Tulane UCF, the winner would be going to the playoffs. So that's it's great development for the group of five, which apparently that term's going away, thank God. And the 12-team playoff, I think, is a – you know, I think we still have a disadvantage because of NIL with some of the so-called Power Five schools, just going to have an advantage there. But I do think with the 12 expanding – with the playoff expanding to 12 and the six highest-rated conference champions getting in, which guarantees the so-called group of five gets in every year, I think it's a great equalizer. As we talked about it with Haymeyer, I don't know if it was on the air or off the air. It's hard to remember now, but – East Carolina, you know, when let's say we're recruiting against NC State, we can legitimately say we have a better shot of winning the American than NC State does of winning the ACC. And if we win the American, it's going to give us a chance to go to the conference to go to the playoffs. We can legitimately say that now. So it'll be interesting to see how much of an impact that has with recruiting and with the transfer portal.
Yeah, I would like to see that because, and again, I know we're talking about that very things. How do we, with, I mean, we're talking about the Sun Belt. You look at a lot of great teams in the Sun Belt. You could go to, you know, whatever league you go to. But American, we're going to be right up there at the top every year. And including, by the way, congratulations to Willie Fritz staying at Tulane. I think that's a great, great thing for them. And they're going to be a dominant factor, you would think, in the American.
Yeah, I think it'll be East Carolina, Tulane, SMU, Memphis, UTSA. You know, I think South Florida, Florida Atlantic, one of the two will rise up. Great hire by Florida Atlantic, hiring Tom Herman today.
Yeah.
They're joining our conference. So Tom Herman's a proven winner at Houston. He did okay at Texas, didn't live up to the expectations they had, but he's a good coach. And I think he'll do well at Florida Atlantic. I really thought they were going to go after, oh, God, help me out, guys, OC at Arkansas.
Kendall Browse.
I really thought they were going to have to Kendall Browse because Kendall was the OC there under Lane Kiffin at Florida Atlantic a few years ago. And Kendall's been a hot name coming up for jobs over the years. And I think maybe that last name of Browse hurts him more than it helps him.
That's what I was going to ask you guys. Is that going to – would he have to change his name?
I don't know. I think it's a shame. I at some point, he'll get the opportunity to be a head coach. I really thought it would be at Florida Atlantic, but you can't argue with their hire. Tom Herman's a good hire. Yeah, unlike UAB, if we're going to talk about, listen, what in the hell is UAB doing? That might be the stupid. Bubba, what are your thoughts on UAB's hire?
My thoughts initially were, you know, it's a total 180 of what they did with Bill Clark, you know, who got them to where they are. When they were winning and you're playing for CUSA titles on a consistent basis after the death of that program. And he came back and you know, prior to the death of the program, you know, they had, what, an 8-win season, Kyle?
It was something like that. Yeah,
seven or eight wins. And they don't play football for a couple years and they come back and do what they've done, just remarkable. With no more support. I know they've had some decent financial support, but as far as attendance at games, certainly not particularly good. And to do what Bill Clark has done was very impressive. It's a shame that he had to step down for health reasons, but Bill Clark was a proven head coach when they hired him, was my point, to him coming over from Jacksonville State. Yeah. And now they're hiring a guy in Trent Dilfer. Obviously, a big name from what he did as a player at Fresno State, and then obviously winning a Super Bowl with the Ravens, and then he's done very well in the prep ranks. But it's certainly a very intriguing hire. for a different reason than Biff Poggi. But you take a look at now Tom Herman at FAU, yeah. Trent Dilfer at UAB, Biff Poggi at Charlotte. A lot of storylines as far as coaches within the American.
Guess which one of those three I think is going to be most successful?
Biff?
No, I'm going to go with Tom Herman. You basically, and Biff has been on Michigan staff for you know, a couple years now. But prior to that, he was known as being a high school coach, if I'm not mistaken. So you got him and Trent Dilfer. Trent Dilfer's a great name, you know, NFL recognition, all that. But done nothing but coach at a private high school. Never coached at college at all. Has been a head coach at a private high school.
Very intrigued to see what kind of staff he assembles.
No kidding. I mean, I just don't. I don't know what UAB's thinking when I heard they interviewed Skip Holtz and Tom Herman also.
I was going to say, Skip Holtz was the – I thought that we would see Skip Holtz back in coaching and in college, and we would be – he would be coming here to Greenville.
Yeah, he's been up for the Charlotte job and the UAB job and was both passed up – was passed over by both for what I think is really strange hires. I just – I don't understand it. If East Carolina would do something like that, I would lose my mind. I don't get it. Are they trying the Deion Sanders thing? This worked at Jacksonville State, Jackson State rather, thinking that a big name will come in with NFL recognition and just get all the recruits. I don't know. I don't know what UAB's thinking.
That's the only thing I could think of, Kyle, is that he's the face of the program, and then if he can get the, like we were discussing earlier off air, is if he can get the really good coaches, assistant coaches, then. That knows how to recruit, maybe, but it's such a gamble. Like you guys were talking about with having Bill Clark. I mean, the stability.
Yeah, and keep in mind again for anybody that no, Bill Clark was not fired. He left because of health reasons. How did their interim? I thought their interim coach that they're bowl eligible, aren't they?
I think so. I'm not 100%.
I believe they were. Were they 7-5, Bubba?
I have to look it up.
I want to say they were maybe. 6-6. I think they had to maybe win their finale to become bowl eligible.
Okay. But, you know, even so, I'm still a little bit surprised if the interim coach got him bowl eligible that he wasn't more of a serious candidate.
Yeah, they are. They're 6-6, Kyle.
Okay, so their interim coach takes them to a bowl and doesn't get the job. So I don't know. It's to me, like I said, that's their problem. But you would hope. Teams coming in the league would be on the rise, and I think that's what they're trying to do. I think they made a wrong turn, and maybe Trent Dilfer to work out for them, but it doesn't make sense to me on paper.
So if Mike Houston leaves, then we have to get a former quarterback in the NFL?
No, please. Let's get an experienced coach that's been successful, preferably head coach experience, if not a seasoned coordinator, and you know that's the route I think we should take.
So they have to on the resume has to be Super Bowl champion.
Only if you're a Super Bowl champion coach.
Okay.
Yeah. Not a player. Player.
Don't hate the game. In fact, Johnny Robertson brings up a great point, and he's the best. JR is the best. He says that UAB has been to a bowl 7 years in a row.
Yeah. I would have probably just made the interim coach permanent just to keep the stability. Because to be honest with you, Bill Clark's health problems were back related. It's not like he has cancer. It's not like he has some disease. It's back problems. And I know back problems can be excruciating, but you figure at some point he's going to come back to the game. So, I don't know if I would have stepped that far away from him.
Yeah. Do you think that they're trying to move on from him?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's exactly what they're trying to do. Yeah, I think they're trying to create a new identity. Probably the AD who's there now did not hire him. And that's probably why the interim coach didn't get the position. Because to me, taking over an interim situation, no matter how much talent you have coming back, is a hard job. I think at Ohio, I believe last year, what's his name? The guy that was at Nebraska.
Scott Frost?
No. The guy that was at Ohio for years. We beat him in the St. Pete Bowl. He was at Nebraska before that. Bubba, help me out. I'm dying here.
Oh, 2013 when we went. Oh, yeah.
Well, the former Nebraska head coach, he was the head coach at Ohio for years. So somebody will type on the screen in a minute his name. I cannot think of his name right now. He retired last year during the summer, and their interim coach had a bad year. And this year, second year there, they win their division of the MAC. So my point is, yeah, he inherited a lot of talent, but it's a tough situation as an interim coach. And to get them to bowl eligibility, I believe I would have just kept him as head coach, because to me that's an accomplishment to stabilize the program in an interim situation and take them to bowl eligibility.
Yeah, well, I mean, literally you have the and what do you have to lose? You're already bowl eligible. You see what he could do, and then if it tanks in a year or two,
you just give him a 3-year contract, David. Don't even do 5 years if you're not 100%. But I believe I would have went that route because it's been a very stable program.
No doubt, and who knows, maybe if you had the right coach, then, you know, you could make some noise early on at, in the American. But we'll have to wait and see. That Trent Dilfer, did you guys, it was kind of like a...
Dave, breaking news, Frank Solich is the name I couldn't think of. Frank Solich.
Thank you. How about the fact that with Dilfer, did you see that one coming? It was like a tornado. I didn't see that one coming.
No, I don't know who would have saw it coming unless you're inside the UAB program. I had no idea that Trent Dilfer was even a candidate for the UAB job. Hadn't heard his name mentioned for any other jobs, so I don't know. Maybe there's something we don't know. But it doesn't make any sense, but it's not our problem. It's their problem. He may do great there. Who knows?
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead, Dave.
No, I was just going to add just to the fact that with the American coaches, it'll be interesting to see with Deion. I think Deion can do – we were talking about USF.
I think Deion's staying at Jackson State, personally.
You do?
Yeah. I do. I read somewhere today he was going to make his announcement Saturday, which tells me he's staying at Jackson State.
Okay. So this was just for this is just hype?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know Deion wouldn't do nothing for just hype, Dave. Deion Sanders.
Well.
Bubba, what were you going to say?
Oh, just speaking of different hires, one that was made last year that has panned out very well. Everyone that knows very much about college football knows how poor New
York. Bubba's cutting out, but what he was going to talk about is New Mexico State. And they're hiring of Jerry Kill in the offseason. And Jerry Kill was, of course, former head coach at Northern Illinois and Minnesota. Got out of the game because of health reasons, kind of came back into the game as an assistant coach. And Jerry Kill has taken New Mexico State to a 5-6 record. They had a game canceled against San Jose State because of wildfires back in October. And they're going to make that up this weekend against Valparaiso. If they win, they'll be 6-6. They'll have two FCS wins, but they have filed an appeal to the NCAA. For bowl eligibility, it'll be interesting to see. I don't think App has done that. I think App has called it a year. But there is a couple of open slots that 5-7 teams may have to fill for bowl games. So if New Mexico State beats Valpo, they may get that waiver cleared and get to go to a bowl with two FCS wins at 6-6. And great accomplishment for Doug Martin took them to a bowl game 1 year, and they won it to the Arizona Bowl over Utah State. They won 7 games. That was their best season in like 50 years. So if Jerry Kill can get them to 6-6 in his first year there, that's incredible.
No doubt about it.
At least that's what I think Bubba was talking about before his mic cut out.
Do you guys have anything before we wrap this thing up?
Nah, I've got nothing. Looking forward to the championship games this weekend. I hope we beat Campbell tomorrow night and anxiously waiting. I guess we'll have our bowl. We're going to do a bowl special Sunday night to talk about the matchup or what's going on, fellas.
And if we do happen to find out prior to Sunday night, if we do get word where the Pirates will be headed, you know, following the championship game between Tulane and UCF, then we'll definitely go live and talk about it then, as well as probably have a more in-depth show on Sunday.
So keep it right here for all the latest in bowls with basketball. A lot going on, and certainly baseball season tickets are going to be on sale soon around the corner. As we told you, the baseball banquet already sold out, so you're not going to be able to go to that unless you know someone, as they say. All right, appreciate Chris Haymeyer. Well, good luck to the Pirates tomorrow on the hardwood as they take on the Campbell Camels. And that'll be tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. Appreciate you, Kyle, buddy. Appreciate you. We've been thinking a lot about you. Hope you feel better.
This week sucked, Dave. Sucked big time, but at least I felt good enough tonight to do the show.
I'm glad you did. It's not the same without you. Bubba Rosenbaum, appreciate you, man. And Matt had to work tonight, so he couldn't be with us, but appreciate him too. All right, we'll get out of here. Until next time, you've been watching the Pirate Preview right here on the Sports Objective. Good night, everybody, and go Pirates. Why not copy that? Everybody gonna see us go bananas, speed that, but don't hold back. Every foot, every yard, every first down, every touchdown with the cannons blast. Get it on, get involved, get the wave going like a hurricane.